Amber Barrett, 10 for the Republic of Ireland. Amber Barrett from 4 yards out.
OTB live commentary. Never miss the action right here on OTB Sports Radio.
All right, it's 10 past 8 and we're turning our attention to Arsenal. I'm glad to say Andrew Mangan of Arseblog is with us this morning. Andrew, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good. I'm looking forward to this game tonight. We were talking about this a little bit earlier on. Owen is one of those Arsenal fans who is a glass half empty man at the moment. Are you a glass half full man yourself?
I'm not sure where my glass is at the moment. It's sometimes half full, sometimes a bit half empty, but I think it's edging towards the glass half full side of things because over the last couple of months, Arsenal have been, they've been pretty solid. There have been some encouraging signs in terms of how the team is playing, how it's been put together. A lot of changes, obviously, to the personnel. There's a freshness about the team and the players, and that's really pleasing rather than seeing kind of the same old mistakes again and again. So, I'm edging towards half full, but obviously tonight is a big challenge for Arsenal.
I think it's really just Arsenal PTSD more than anything else, Andrew, that speaks to the glass half empty view, the fact that something is going to bite them in the ass eventually. Now, of course, the trends are good, the results are good, the age profile is good, both managerially and on the pitch, so you can't really make a case against them going in the right direction. Just the slight concern I'd have is, say, the Palace game, the Brighton game, the Leicester game. It kind of felt in those three games in particular that Arsenal got a better result than they perhaps deserved on the day, and even before the Newcastle game at the weekend, I think they were 15th in the table if you go with non-penalty expected goals. So it's that lack of threat, I think, in attack and maybe getting goals, more goals than they potentially deserve out of games, is what's maybe giving me a little bit of concern.
Yeah, that's understandable. I take issue with the Leicester game because I think Arsenal absolutely deserved to win that on the day. Crystal Palace and Brighton, difficult games, and probably games on paper that you would expect Arsenal to win, or certainly the Arsenal of old to win. I'm a little bit torn on this because it's a concern of mine as well, the lack of goals. I think Arsenal have a negative goal difference, slightly skewed by some big defeats against Liverpool and Manchester City. But my major worry, I suppose, about Mikel Arteta and the kind of football that he plays and he's trying to get his team to play is chance creation and goal scoring, and I think we're a bit light in that regard. There aren't enough goals, there aren't enough players who score goals. At the same time, though, you can look at the statistics, but then you look at the table and you look at the number of points that Arsenal have had, and if they can win games 1-0 and 2-0, maybe they don't need to score a lot of goals. I do think it's an area where you will get found out, though, where the volume of chances that you create will come back to bite you if you let a couple in. I think Arsenal have been pretty defensively solid, which is part of why we are where we are right now. But there are going to be games when things don't go as well as they should in that regard as well. So then you're going to need to score the goal. So I know what you're saying about that, and it is a concern. But, if they can keep scrapping out the wins, if you like, and I think a couple of the wins have been pretty scrappy, it's points on the board that really matters the most.
I think the PTSD point is important here because I suspect the players have had a little bit of that, and it looked clear to me in the Liverpool game in particular where they started brightly, but once the goals were conceded the heads dropped, and that's not a team who's high on confidence or who feels they can recover from that, because they don't have that credit in the bank just yet. But the fact that they're winning tight games against relatively similar standard opposition, that would give me some sense that, like, they have some confidence. It's building slowly, and success is lumpy, and it's going to come in bits and pieces here for Arsenal. I would feel more positive as an outsider watching what's going on now than at any point during the Arteta period, that there's a definitive style of play. He chops and changes the team, but it always seems to make sense when he does. He's getting better performances from players over a period of time than they were previously. That suggests good coaching and an overarching structure where they're trying to do something again and again and again. And as a football fan, that's kind of all I want.
Yeah, I like that. Success is lumpy. That's a really good way of putting it. The point about Liverpool, you know, a lot of the players haven't really experienced Anfield before. You know, so maybe the PTSD that you reference would certainly have been more applicable to Arsenal sides of the past. And there was obviously a familiarity about the way the game went against Liverpool and the scoreline in particular. But in the first half, I thought Arsenal were quite brave in terms of how they tried to play it out from the back. We know how good Liverpool are, how high they press, and how quickly they can hurt you if you lose the ball in your half. So there were encouraging signs there, but the fact is, this is a really young team. It's been put together pretty much over the course of this. Last summer's transfer window, there were 6 signings. Most of them are in the team on a regular basis now. There's young players like Bukayo Saka and Emile Smith Rowe who have come through the academy. And the experienced players, the likes of Lacazette, the likes of Aubameyang, Thomas Partey, I think they're the ones who maybe need to step up a little bit now and show a bit of guidance, a bit of leadership, a bit of been there, done that kind of savvy, particularly for games like this, because Manchester United have not been brilliant this season by any stretch of the imagination, but they have such an array of attacking talent, such depth in those positions that going there is going to be very difficult. I don't think Arsenal will go there with any fear, but United are a team that can hurt you and will hurt you and will keep going right until the end. We've seen them score lots of late goals this season so far. So on a night like tonight, you're looking for those senior players maybe just to step up and do a bit more and guide these young players who I think are going to go out and try and do what they do in every game, regardless of where it is and who they're playing against.
That transfer window that you speak about, there was obviously a very slow start to the season for Arsenal, and part of that's the natural bedding in period. Part of that was probably them not quite sure exactly what they'd got in terms of how they were all going to fit into the overarching plan. But that would suggest that the club is more unified than perhaps we were led to believe in the summer, because it seemed like from the exterior that there was a power struggle, but maybe that's not the case.
I'm not sure there was necessarily a power struggle. I mean, there was previously when Wenger left and there was this triumvirate of Gazidis and Raul Sanyehi, Sven Mislintat, there was certainly a power struggle there, and the man who came out on top was, he left the previous summer. I think there's probably more unity behind the scenes than people realised. There was a quote from Arteta after the opening 3 games, and Arsenal lost all 3 games. They lost to Brentford, to Man City and Chelsea, and clearly that has an impact on how you're viewed as a manager, fan opinion and all of that kind of stuff. And he came out and he said something along the lines of, this is the best 10 or 15 days of my football career. You know, this is a man who's won trophies. Excuse me. You know, he's had some success as a player. So it sounded like a really strange thing to say. But what I think happened behind the scenes was he had the backing of his players. He didn't lose his players after those 3 games. And that was really important. I think that's been the bedrock of this recent run, this uptick in form. Players who have gone out and worked really hard. You know, some of the wins, excuse me again, were really scrappy. Norwich and Burnley, for example, the 2 games immediately after that first international break, 2-1-0 wins. Tough going, but you don't get those wins unless the players are behind you. So there's certainly a unity between the players and the manager and the executive team. They backed him, they have faith in him, and so far they've been rewarded with that for the most part, because look, there have been some ups and downs, and there will be ups and downs when you've got a young team that's inexperienced, but the table, I think, tells its own story. If you'd said to Arsenal fans after those opening 3 games of the season, you could go into the top 4 at the start of December with a win, I'm not sure many would have believed it, but that's the case.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, the when you look at but the thing you just spoke about there about Arteta and the trust the players have in him, that's the thing that would give you real hope to actually be able to build on something this season, that if, say, the top four challenge does fade away over a period of time, that there is a manager here who the players are fully backing. And if there are any concerns that this young squad could get picked off by their rivals over the course of the next few transfer windows, the fact that those players are in full belief of their manager probably allays those fears a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think as a player, if you can see that you're in a team and at a club that is, in inverted commas, going places or has the potential to, you know, to challenge for things, I mean, that's where Arsenal need to get back to. You know, they need to get back into Europe. They need to get back into the Champions League. They need, ultimately, to become a team that can challenge for the title. And that's a long way away. When you look at the three teams who are going to go for it this season, Chelsea, Liverpool and Manchester City, leaving aside the resources that they have. And I say this because, you know, after Arsenal spent more money than anybody in the transfer window last summer. So it's not simply a question of resources and money, but how mature those teams are, how much they've grown together and developed over time and changed. And, you know, that's a tough level to get to, particularly when there are other clubs who are going to try and do it. You know, Manchester United have brought in Ralph Rangnick, who's a very smart appointment in the short term. And ultimately, they're going to have to go for something in the long term as well. So there was really only one way for Arsenal to do this, to try and get back there, and that was to grow something together. They tried the been there, done that, worn the T-shirt players, you know, the likes of David Luiz and Willian, who they thought could come in and whose experience could, you know, bridge the gap. And we saw that it couldn't. And, you know, those players are gone, and I'm glad they're gone. And there's no assurances when you do it like this, when you do it with young players. But at least there is a strategy. At least somebody has sat down and said, look, the way we were doing it, we were going nowhere. We have to do it differently. We have to try something else. The age profile of the players that they brought in, all either 22, 23 or 24 years of age. Or maybe 21, 22, 23, something like that. They've got young players in there like Smith Rowe, Saka, Martinelli, who I mentioned, Gabriel, the central defender as well, is still very young. You know, this is a really, really young team. There are going to be ups and downs. There are going to be blips along the way, but it really does represent Arsenal's best chance to grow something and to develop a side that can hopefully compete. And I think if you get back into Europe, if you generate more revenue, if you've got that profile again, then maybe next summer or the summer after, you can add that little bit of star quality in the transfer market, if you like, you know, because you're an attractive destination again for the top players. Top players aren't going to come to a club that isn't in Europe, that isn't in the Champions League. And that's a reality that Arsenal have had to deal with. It doesn't mean that they won't go for those kind of signings in the future, but they have to build to a point where those kind of players want to come.
Yeah, and you get them at the right stage of their career. Like, you know, the comparisons with Liverpool, I think, are always worth making, because that first season when Klopp arrived wasn't a success for them, although they ended up in a cup final and they lost that cup final. There was like a long, slow, steady build. People think, oh, Jurgen Klopp arrived and immediately they got jolted into a world-class side. They actually, they had to make sure that the squad was the right age profile and ready to do the things that he wanted them to do on the field, and then they added in the world-class players as well. Can I ask about Aubameyang? Because I think one of the key things from what's happened is that there's no longer a circus. It feels like there's no longer a circus around Arsenal, that stuff isn't leaking out, that there isn't a constant drip feed of stuff undermining the management. Like, if you think back to last season and Aubameyang's car and the revving of the car outside and him being pissed off about being dropped, that was a massive sideshow for your most important player to be involved in. And yet here he is back contributing. Like, it's very difficult to come back from a scenario where the agent is clearly, or somebody close to, is telling bad things to the press, and the press are lapping it up because it's the soap opera that we all are so addicted to. That to me suggests a very mature management style, where you have a massive asset, and instead of just burning it out, you rekindle that relationship somehow, and you don't lose face with the rest of your team. Difficult job.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the Aubameyang thing was slightly overblown You know, that incident where he turned up late for the North London Derby and was dropped because of that. I mean, it's part of the way Arteta has dealt with certain things, that he has these non-negotiables, as he calls them. And like, if you're captain or if you're the 19-year-old, the rules apply to everybody in the same way. And Aubameyang's, you know, Arsenal had a difficult season last season. They finished eighth. It wasn't good enough. They had that terrible run. Aubameyang didn't score enough goals. And clearly, as like a world-class striker who has scored 25, 30 goals every season for the last 6-7 years, when there's a drop off like that, people immediately looked at it like the Ozil situation. He got the contract and now the productivity has dwindled. There were a lot of off-field things with Aubameyang. You know, he did have a sick relative that played a part. He also got malaria. He had a couple of injuries. For me, it was never really a case that, you know, he was phoning it in or he didn't care or anything like that. I just think there were reasons why he had a bad season. He's having a, you know, there are a lot of questions about him now over the last couple of weeks because he hasn't scored since the Villa game in October and everything else. But he missed a penalty against Watford. He missed a glorious chance against Newcastle at the weekend, which, you know, 99 times out of 100, he sticks that away. And we're not necessarily having that conversation. But, you know, Arteta has to find some balance in the squad. You can't do it all with young players. So he does need Aubameyang. He does need Partey. He does need Lacazette. These guys around the first team who, you know, can provide that guidance. Aubameyang maybe is an easy target, but I still think the goals or Arsenal's best. He's our best striker, basically. There's an issue down the line, certainly, where Arsenal have to address that position in the transfer market. I think they'll do it next summer. But for now, he's the main man. He gets picked in every game. I think he'll start tonight. And, you know, hopefully he can get back on the goal-scoring track.
Is Martinelli a ready-made successor to Aubameyang if he does start to go on the downturn with age?
I don't know, really. It's hard to know exactly what Gabriel Martinelli is. Is he a centre forward? Is he a wide player? I'm not quite sure on that yet, but certainly he's got fantastic goal-scoring instincts, as we saw against Newcastle. That was a brilliant goal. And in his first season at Arsenal, you know, I think he scored 10 goals as an 18-year-old. So he's got that potential. It's just quite where he will fit into the team. I'm not sure yet. It could be centre forward. It could be wide. He is a bit like Aubameyang in that he's not really a guy who gets a lot of touches. He's not that involved in the build-up. He wants to be on the end of things, as his movement for that goal against Newcastle showed. But certainly there's a player of real potential and promise there. It's just quite where they see him. We're not sure because he hasn't played a great deal this season. There are other options as well. Follerin Balogun is a very talented young striker who's way too good for the under-23 level now. Whether he's quite ready to step up when Aubameyang goes to the African Cup of Nations, I'm not quite sure. He could need a loan, but they do have some young players there who could challenge for sure.
It seems like it's actually quite exciting if you can both allow yourselves to be excited as Arsenal fans. Owen still refusing to point blank to allow himself to get carried away. But when you start listing off the talent and the age profile, like when you were talking about the squad, just checking, Martinelli's still only 20, has recovered from a big injury, has had that 10 goals in a season. Like if he only ever scores 10 goals every season between now and the end of his career at Arsenal, that's a great career for a forward. Like, you know, so there is something building there.
There is. I mean, the ingredients are there. We have to see if they can be all cooked together to make a delicious meal in the end. But certainly it's easy to get behind young players as well, because you, first and foremost, you look for their potential. You say, what could they be? And you perhaps project onto them all the possibilities that they could achieve in the game. But there's also the fact that they haven't disappointed you. They haven't annoyed you. You know, we're not talking about the likes of Luiz, like Mustafi, Kolasinac, players who've been there and done that and didn't do it and did the same terrible things time and time again, which becomes infuriating and hard to live with and hard to deal with. you know, they made six signings this summer, and if all six of those signings are fixtures in the team in 3 or 4 years, we can say that's an incredible piece of transfer business. It may not be. I think maybe one or two of them won't quite reach the heights and may depart along the way. But for now, you're looking at these guys who are coming in. They're young. They've got a point to prove. They're hungry. And it's exciting. It's just far preferable to what we've had at Arsenal over the last number of years, that this strategy, it feels coherent.
Yeah.
And the potential of it is obviously high. Whether we get there or not, we'll have to wait and see. But it's much nicer to be sitting here thinking about what it could be than what you don't want it to be in the present, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's the absence of randomness now is something that you can believe in and have faith in. And this is worthy of the time that you spend on whatever team you support is, as opposed to just being badly managed. Two quick things I wanted to mention. The Women's Cup final is on Sunday against Chelsea. Katie McCabe starring for Arsenal at the moment. I talked to her recently for our Cadbury's Roadshow, and she was saying that there's not much crossover, but there's definitely some crossover. They kind of say at various stages she'll go and watch the men's team train, and there does seem to be a proper concerted effort from the club to put out a united front and to unify the support base.
Well, you know, when we were looking at what Arsenal were going to do at executive level this summer, one of the interesting things was they had to replace Joe Montemurro, who is the previous manager. Really popular guy, successful. And what were the club going to do when we were looking for them to invest in the men's team? Were there signs that the decision making at executive level, when they came to addressing some of the issues on the women's team, could that give us a clue as to like their efficacy, how good they were? And they brought in a very good manager. He's had an incredible start. Jonas Eideval has had a great start. They brought in some really good players, high profile players, Tobin Heath, for example. They built a squad which is now bigger and more robust. He can go into certain games and rest the likes of Vivian Miedema, who is clearly one of the best strikers in the world. So there is definitely progression there when it comes to the Arsenal women's team. They're having a great season. They've got the final on Sunday. And there is more, I think, awareness. There's more interest across the Arsenal fan base in the women's team now, which is great to see. They're going to play against Barcelona at the Emirates next week in the Champions League, and there's going to be a lot of people there to see that. So hopefully it goes well on Sunday. Katie McCabe, obviously, a hugely talented player, has been brilliant for Arsenal and for Ireland this season. And if she came up with the goods at Wembley on Sunday, you wouldn't be at all surprised.
No, of course not. And speaking of coming up with the goods, congratulations to you. Second year in a row, you've won the Fan Media of the Year at the FSA Awards. This is a big deal. People in Ireland might not be familiar with it, but like, these are the main football writers' awards. The Football Journalist of the Year, we had him on yesterday. Jonathan Wilson was crowned. He was pretty happy about life. You must be pretty happy about this because you've done back to back.
Yeah, defended our titles, so we're very pleased. And you know, we've spent a lot of time. I talked about the women's team. We've really enhanced our coverage of the women's team. We've got a brilliant correspondent, Tim Stillman, who is basically the main man when it comes to the Arsenal women's team in terms of coverage and his knowledge of it. And we're doing more video stuff, so we're trying to expand as much as we can. All the stuff around the men's team, the youth teams. It's a growing team of people at Arsblog right now. It's not just me. There are, you know, 7 or 8 regular contributors and specializing in different things, tactics and stats and all of that kind of stuff. So the award was, you know, an acknowledgement of all the work that they've done over the last year as well. So we'll keep going and keep trying, and maybe we can make it 3 in a row next year.
Well, listen, well deserved. You were one of the pioneers of fan media back for the last 2.5 decades. So an overnight success with back-to-back awards, but it's been 20 years in the making, Andrew. Congratulations.
Thanks, Ger. Really appreciate it.
That's Andrew Mangan there of Arsblog, who knows the ins and outs of that club better than almost anybody in the world at this point. Surely now you're like, yeah, come on.
Yeah, it's hard. It's like, like, I mean, Arsenal going into a game against Manchester United as favourites. I mean,
are they favourites?
I actually don't know for sure, but it feels that they're certainly there's a bit of momentum going into a massive game. But look, it's you've described me as a glass half empty fan, and it's impossible to look at it in a glass half full way sometimes when you're following Arsenal. But this year has been hopeful, and as I said, I don't deny that they're going in the right direction. It's just this immediate form that they're in at the moment. I'm just questioning the veracity of that at the moment.
Fool me once, shame on you. Ain't gonna fool me second, third time. That's you. You're George W. Bush, right?
I really am, but it's like I'm about to be fooled for the 746th time.
Oh no, the glorious sport of you feel alive. You commit to this, the new iteration, and then they break your heart again, and you're like, never again, and then they suck you back in. That's what this is about, Owen.
Yeah.
That's why we do this.
Yes, I know.
To feel alive.
I know. Maybe I'm just yerring away everything else, and this is actually deep down, I actually believe that they're going to win everything and conquer all their land in the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's a bad thing, I'm telling you. It's like I'm like Red in Shawshank. Hope is a dangerous thing. Yeah, it's a bad thing. It's the opposite of hope.
It is. It's taking away your happiness.
You talk yourself into it, and you're like, oh, am I sorry? Who was I yerring? Me or them?
Yeah, but the thing is, it doesn't exist. Obviously, it's just a complete fabrication.
Double media fabrication.
Exactly. Why would you want to absolutely get rid of your sense of happiness?
All right. OTBAM brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. You can have very clearly defined moles like me.